Welcome to the Boxed Wine and Witchcraft Podcast, opening your eyes to the mysteries and magic of an unseen world. Here's your host, Alexa.
Hey, everyone. I'm Alexa Reeves, your witch and host on today's episode of Boxed Wine and Witchcraft. Today, we are going to take a quick pit stop over to some festive holiday lore and traditions that you may find yourself running into this cold season. Things like the Yule log, the Holly King, and something about a very hungry Yule cat are all going to be covered in this little mini-series while we cover some of the most common cold weather magic and pagan lore. As always, we like to remind you that your spirituality and religion is as unique as your fingerprints. What we say here is by no means the definitive rule on any topic, merely a jumping off point for you to begin your exploration into the wild world around us. So, with air that inspires us, earth that grounds us, fire that enlightens us, and water that moves us, grab yourself some yummy apple cider. Maybe give yourself a little bit of a spiked flavor in there if you're feeling froggy tonight, and cozy up under a blanket as we talk about some of the more popular winter holiday traditions. Today's episode, we are going to talk about the Holly King. Now, I know holly is one of those words that tends to get thrown around a lot during the winter months, the Christmas months. You see it in a lot of decorations. We see it in a lot of holiday carols and things like that. And there's gobs of references of it across history. But I wanted to do a deep dive into who the Holly King was. And he's known for this epic battle with the Oak King. So I did some deep dive into some research here, and I'm going to tell you guys all about it. The Holly King is the Celtic basis for personifying winter and summer, respectively, as seasons. I was surprised to learn that there actually wasn't a specific one person that could be labeled as the Holly King or the Oak King. But actually, they were kind of painted more as archetypes or themes. The Holly King being the dark half of the year, the waning half. Anything from the fall, the autumn into that winter, the Oak King being on the other side, the light half of the year, the waxing half of the year. And the basic trope for this epic battle, so to speak, between the Holly King and the Oak King is really no much more difficult than just the Holly King taking his throne, usually at summer solstice, as the days begin to grow shorter and shorter and less sunlight is available. And then the Oak King taking back that throne during the winter solstice, as the days become longer, as more sunlight takes over. So I did some digging into some of the origins here, just to kind of see if I could find any historical literary references to the Holly King. Aside from the Holly and Oak King being a prime example of dichotomy, which is a pretty popular trope in most major religions, there are some vague references to the Holly King in James George Frazer's mythology. It's a comparative mythology tome called The Golden Bough. He wrote that in about 1890. He talks a little bit about one chapter in particular where he talks of the killing of the tree spirit and the battle of summer and winter. And I'd like to read you a little bit of an excerpt from his work because I thought it was a pretty good summary of that dichotomy. So Mr. Frazer goes on to say, sometimes in the popular customs of the peasantry, the contrast between the dormant powers of vegetation in winter and their awakening vitality in spring takes the form of dramatic contest between actors who play the parts respectively of winter and summer. Thus, in the towns of Sweden on May Day, two troops of young men on horseback used to meet as if for mortal combat. One of them was led by a winter person clad in furs who threw snowballs and ice in order to prolong the cold winter months. The other troop was commanded by a representative of summer, covered with fresh leaves and flowers. In the sham fight, which followed the party, summer always comes off victorious and the ceremony ends with a big feast. But there's no actual historical reference to one specific person. This was more of a party trope, a theme. really, than it was an actual person. So digging a little bit further and trying to find out why the Holly and the Oak King became so popular, I was able to find an Irish descendant author, Robert Graves, who also wrote his own kind of comparative mythology book. His was in the late 1940s called The White Goddess. And in that book, he actually takes the stance of the Holly and the Oak King aren't actual people. They're not titles for real historical figures, but they're archetypes. And they could be linked to some pretty popular dichotomies out there. Literary references of Irish figures, Lu and Balor of the Evil Eye. I found several references of the Arthurian legend of Sir Gawain and the Green Knight being, you know, the Holly and the Oak King. I even found some biblical references of Jesus and John the Baptist being portrayed as the Holly and the Oak King in their own kind of perspective ways, which makes a lot of sense. Those archetypes and those dualities are a very common popular theme. And it would make sense that, especially among the pre-Christianized parts of Europe, among the, you know, illiterate pagan folk, that's what you had available. You had the light half of the year when things grew and you could harvest food, and then you had the dark half of the year where it got cold and nothing grew. So it makes sense from a storytelling standpoint that the Holly and the Oak King would be a very common literary trope that would be used again and again. In the religion of Wicca, we see that these are two aspects of the horned god, possibly, and that it's not necessarily a, you know, 1v1 type battle so much as it's the different aspects of the horned god throughout the year as he kind of waxes and wanes in his power as, you know, lord of the forest. In a lot of the pagan and Wicca research I was able to look through, the kind of basic imagery is pretty consistent. Anytime the Holly King is depicted, it's usually in darker woods. He's usually wearing red. He looks like a woodsy version of a Santa Claus, almost. Red robes, tangled hair, wearing sprigs of holly. While the Oak King usually is in a green, lush forest, his beard is fuller, more dark brown, lots of green growth and things like that around him. Doing a little bit further research, though, I was able to start finding some more significant references to why holly itself was an important piece of imagery, why, out of all the plants in the world, obviously we understand that oak being a very versatile piece of plant life, not only in its metaphysical aspects, but in its actual practical aspects, as far as working with the lumber, working with the tree itself. But I didn't know as much about holly. So holly is a plant I started to look to try to find some references as to why holly was so significant. I was able to find an amazing poem written by King Henry VIII, of all people, in which he says, "Green groweth the holly, so doth the ivy. Through winter blasts blow never so high, green groweth the holly. As the holly groweth green, and never changeth hue, so I am, ever hath been, unto my lady true. As the holly groweth green, with ivy all alone, when flowers cannot be seen, and greenwood leaves be gone." He then goes on to talk about his lady and forsaking all others, which is pretty typical for Henry VIII. But I find it significant that as far as a love poem or a poem of dedication to a queen or his love or whoever he was wooing at that point, he chose holly as this evergreen type of plant life. As the Christianization of Europe came further, I did find the Christian hymn of the Holly and the Ivy, which links Jesus and Mary to that imagery between holly and ivy. But I peeled those layers back a little bit and went back down the pagan route for why holly kept coming up in any of this research. Holly, as a plant and as a tree, has actually been pretty sacred for as long as there's been written record for it. The boughs of holly trees were brought into homes or planted near homes to give protection. A lot of times, sprigs or branches of holly were brought into the house one, to confer protection, but two, to also offer fairies a place to live, a place to hide away in the winter months. Which makes sense. When you look at pictures of what holly as a plant actually looks like, it's a very dark green, waxy plant. It reflects light and it stays green through the coldest months of the year. Its berries are bright and red. And even though at the beginning of the winter months, they're very hard and almost inedible, after a few freezes and thaws and after the plant sits, the berries become really nutritious and a staple food for a lot of agricultural societies to be able to feed their livestock. Not only that, the wood itself is white in color naturally. It's a very close-grained wood, making it very flexible at times. I found several references to holly as a tree naturally connotating control or, you know, power over something, which is why I saw a lot of references to farmers or horse whips preferred to be made out of holly branches, because that was the type of wood that could confer control over the animal. I found several references to the fact that it was bad luck to cut a holly tree down completely. You were allowed to take sprigs or cuttings from it, but leaving the whole tree standing was pretty important across several different cultures. Any cuttings or things like that that were taken in were fine, but the trees were left standing because of the myth that witches or spirits that were traveling over the hedges would get hung up on the prickly leaves of the holly tree. They wouldn't be able to pass it as easily. So we have this, again, mythological reference to a tree bringing protection. I also found several pagan custom references to kind of a more folk-related version of the Holly and the Oak King, but this one was Holly and Ivy, where a young boy of the village would dress all in holly leaves and sprigs, a young girl would be dressed in ivy leaves, and they would parade around town as a celebration of the winter solstice and the bringing of the greenness back to the world. And if you think about it from an agricultural standpoint, it kind of makes sense that holly as a plant would be seen as sacred. If you've got a land desolate of all other things growing, you know, none of your plants are growing, none of the vegetables are growing, and then you have this very thick, green, spiky plant that seems to be thriving in the winter months. And I imagine a lot of our pagan ancestors would look at that and see that as a sign of hope, as a sign of resilience. If a plant like this can survive the cold and icy winters, then maybe we can too. So it makes sense from an anthropological standpoint that holly would become a symbol of hope, a symbol of protection, and the coming of the warmer months as we battle through winter. So this year, I encourage all of you to take some time and find your own version of the holly to celebrate with. Remember, don't cut the whole tree down. That is considered bad luck, but go out into the woods. Find where some holly is growing naturally. Offer up a little bit of a sacrifice and prayer of gratitude and take a sprig in with you to put on your altar. Let us know if you guys have any fun traditions or recipes or anything that you like to do with holly sprigs or the holly tree as a celebration. And remember, this cold winter solstice, we celebrate the fact that the Holly King is slowly but surely getting ready to take his rest. The Oak King is getting ready to take back his throne. Because at winter solstice, finally, daylight starts creeping back in, and we are going to be done with these cold, cold days. So until then, pour yourself something warm to drink and celebrate the only way you know how. I'll see you all next time.